You are listening to Captain Blackwell's Prize, written by V. E. Ulett. Episode 1, Chapter 1. The battle started the moment the English captain clapped his hat back on his head after raising it in salute to Captain de Leon y Castillo, who stood on the quarterdeck of His Most Catholic Majesty King Carlos IV's 42-gun frigate, La Trinidad. "Serve the brute out," Captain de Leon y Castillo called to his officers. To a man, their faces expressed surprise at the temerity of a mere sloop of war approaching to engage them. La Trinidad's broadside roared out at her captain's command. Her ill-aimed guns sent shot flying through the sails of the English ship and clear over her, the cannonball's shrieking progress ending in the tormented sea. The English captain pressed on and brought his ship within 3 cables' length of La Trinidad, maneuvered into position, and opened fire directly into his opponent's lower gun deck. Before the Spaniard could answer, he poured in 2 more broadsides, then hauled his wind, dropping astern of La Trinidad, and raked her with grapeshot and chain. The deck of La Trinidad mushroomed into a cloud of wreckage. Splintered wood from the width of needles to sharpened stakes flew wildly over the vessel. The devastation aboard La Trinidad was tremendous. Gun ports knocked into singular gaping holes. Cannons dismounted and more lethal on the heaving deck than the enemy. The English vessel wore and sent in another rolling broadside, killing nearly all La Trinidad's officers on the upper deck. Captain de Leon y Castillo was unharmed on the quarterdeck, in part due to the splinter netting now falling down upon his ears. He rallied the men to fight the previously disengaged side of the ship, where the British vessel was ranging into position. La Trinidad's 24-pound smashers spoke out from her poop, but her shot did no damage. The enemy's fire became unremitting, and men were cut down around Captain de Leon y Castillo. The wind of one of the Englishmen's shot took his hat off as it passed, and killed the entire gun's crew serving the larboard quarterdeck carronade. His ship and her people were cruelly mauled. Her broadside had not been heard since the raking fire across her stern. Her fore and main topsail yards were down on the caps, and La Trinidad's hull had been galled many times. Captain de Leon y Castillo ordered the carpenter to rig slings over the side to reach the holes, but the slings were instantly shot away. Moments later, the ship's rudder was disabled, leaving La Trinidad helpless in the rising swell. The British ship of 28 guns edged down before the wind and lay on La Trinidad's quarter, the intention quite clear. The Englishmen would board. The British captain's shouted orders were heard as the ship neared. Captain de Leon y Castillo was knocked to the deck by the collision of the 2 ships, and he was struggling to his feet when the boarding hooks were tossed to La Trinidad, and the Englishmen began lashing the ships together. The sight spurred Captain de Leon y Castillo, who sprang up, drawing his sword. He drew it almost upon a youngster in midshipman's dress, scrambling beneath the fallen splinter netting. "All hands to repel boarders," Captain de Leon y Castillo called. The pale and blackened faces of Englishmen came screaming up the Spaniard's side, calling out the name of their ship and slashing with boarding axes. The pop and ping of pistol and musket shot filled the air, and the clash of sword on pike, cutlass, and axe. Captain de Leon y Castillo met one enemy after another. The young person fighting beside Captain de Leon y Castillo was aware of the La Trinidad's giving way before the furious English assault. The majority of the Spanish crew were natives pressed into service in America, and without their officers to urge them to die for a king and a land they had never yet seen, they didn't fight with the spirit the Englishmen brought to the contest. On the quarterdeck, they were being overrun. Captain de Leon y Castillo, who had never yet lost a duel, laid about him the first rush of attackers. but he was a middle-aged commander, far from well. And when the fighting on the quarter-deck was in a close-packed crowd, his elegant swordplay counted for little. The Spanish captain's young companion witnessed a well-favored lieutenant of the Royal Navy hammer so effectively at Captain de Leon y Castillo he dropped his guard in weariness, and the Englishman thrust his sword under the captain's ribs and ran him through the vitals. The lieutenant withdrew his bloody sword, crouched down, and in passing sprang up and threw the youngster alongside the captain into the binnacle. The cap she wore flew off from the tremendous knock, and Mercedes pushed herself to her knees and crawled to Captain de Leon y Castillo. She dragged his head and shoulders onto her lap. "Mercedes, John Bull over there is a gentleman. You must go below and put on a gown. Tell him you are my wife, my daughter, whatever you wish. Carry my letter to Marie Angel. Make haste now, and promise me you will send the letter and my weapons to my sons." Mercedes held Captain de Leon y Castillo's hand. Never had she heard him speak so mildly of an Englishman. Always before, they were dogs or horse sons. The hell scene of fighting had shifted to the break of the quarterdeck. La Trinidad's men were fleeing the British, trying to gain shelter below, and turned back by the soldiers. The captain recalled her, squeezing her hand. "I swear it, Captain. God's blessing on you," Mercedes said. She eased him to the deck and rose. The captain, with the last of his strength, called out to the sailing master, "Mr. Martinez, lower the flag. Marines there, lift that grating for Doña Mercedes." In his cabin below, she had changed the stained midshipman's attire for a gown selected as most resembling those worn by English women. But she hadn't traded the boots for slippers when she heard the commotion outside. There was no time for the captain's effects. She tied the sash in which were sewn her mother's jewels around her waist and jammed a letter and her slippers under the belt. Then she yanked open the cabin door. The same handsome officer who had murdered Captain de Leon y Castillo was pulling his sword from the sentry's stomach. Mercedes ran for the companion ladder, but was arrested in her ascent when the sentry cried out, "God go with you, Doña Mercedes." She turned and found the British lieutenant behind her on the ladder, his face level with her backside, and she saw him raise his arm and discharge his pistol. The ball caught the sentry, the second son of a good Barcelona family, in the face. Mercedes flew up the ladder, stumbled over the coaming of the hatchway, and gained the deck. Chapter 2. Captain Blackwell heard the single pistol shot and saw the woman stagger out of the hatchway and run to a Spanish seaman by the taffrail, who immediately put her behind him. He continued giving orders to his carpenter to report on the captured vessel's condition, and wasn't surprised when his second lieutenant came up the companion ladder in the woman's wake. "What was that shot below, Mr. Spragg?" Captain Blackwell called out. "Resistance from the sentry at the captain's door, sir." "His papers?" Captain Blackwell said. Mr. Spragg answered with a blush and a mumbled excuse. Captain Blackwell turned away to attend to his third lieutenant, who, with a party of seamen, was coming up from the main gun deck with more prisoners under guard. He heard Mr. Spragg's comment, "Ain't it just like the Dons to bring a woman along of them?" before receiving Mr. Verson's report. The two lieutenants were similar in their backgrounds. Neither came of an influential family. They were the sons of nobody particular. Captain Blackwell judged them as he did all naval officers, first as seamen and then as men. He thought the one capable and honest, and the other a lubberly wicked brute. While he listened to Mr. Verson's report, he stared at the blood covering the lieutenant's shoes. Staining his white stockings, it looked as though he had waded in it. Mr. Verson was in a party sent round the disengaged side of La Trinidad when the firing ceased, boarding through her entry port to subdue her main deck gun crews. There was not much fight in them when we arrived, sir. With no less than 3 18-pounders loose and causing bloody murder, we secured them, sir, and bring up 30 prisoners. Well done, Mr. Verson. Where is Mr. Whittemore? Captain Blackwell's first lieutenant had led Mr. Verson's boarding party. Dead, sir. Copped it as we were boarding. Some bugger slammed him with a handspike. Oh, he shall be sadly missed. Who's bringing up the rest of the prisoners? That's all there is, sir. All the men able to walk. Mr. Verson came closer to his captain and lowered his voice. There are many dead, sir. Many, many dead and wounded. Mr. Bransford, called Captain Blackwell in a voice strong enough to reach the midshipman in charge on his quarterdeck. The ships had parted the lashings and drifted apart. Send the doctor across. Take possession, Mr. Verson, if you please, and send a party immediately to bring up Mr. Whittemore and any of ours. Mr. Sprague, count off 20 men from the prisoners to man the pumps, and the rest to inconstant. Captain Blackwell called for his gig, and was at his station on the weather side of the quarterdeck in time to watch the Spanish woman come aboard inconstant. She judged the swell, looking over her shoulder, and sprang for the ship on the rise, and then she came up the side like a right sailor, with the man who had shielded her on board La Trinidad behind her, ready to place her feet. Captain Blackwell wondered how many of the men looking on envied that seaman. He certainly did, yet he strove to appear disinterested. He saw the attentive gazes of his officers and the younger hands, but there were wry looks from some of the older men, the man-of-war's men, who believed women brought ill fortune on a vessel. Captain Blackwell didn't credit nonsense about women being able to control the wind and bring on storms, but as a man subject to the vagaries of war and the elements, he reserved judgment on the sources of fortune, ill or otherwise. His opinion of a woman on a vessel of war was it might certainly be a bad stroke of luck for the woman. Mr. Sprague, assemble the prisoners aft. I wish to address them. And when the prisoners were there before him, several score of disconsolate faces turned toward him, Captain Blackwell ordered the word to be passed for his brother. Mr. Blackwell came on deck a few moments later, a younger, slighter version of the captain, stepped to his brother's side, and, with a bowed head, listened to his instructions. Men of La Trinidad, you are prisoners of His Britannic Majesty's ship Inconstant, boomed out Captain Blackwell, followed by his brother's translation at lower volume in Spanish. You will be taken below and set down to be exchanged at the nearest port if you cooperate. If you do not, you will be killed and put over the side. Bodies, in fact, were yet going over the side of La Trinidad. If any of you rated able seamen, any skilled men, wish to join His Britannic Majesty's service, you will be set to work. Captain Blackwell turned to his new first lieutenant. Prisoners below, if you please, Mr. Sprague. We shall work out a schedule to give them air and exercise at a later time. Aye, aye, sir. Not the lady. Put her in my cabin, Captain Blackwell said, perhaps a shade too loudly. Conscious of a misstep, Captain Blackwell muttered, "The fucking brute," under his breath to his brother beside him. Francis Blackwell merely pursed his lips. They were the only offspring of a country parson, but Captain Blackwell had been from home since the age of 12, and was more the product of the Royal Navy than a genteel upbringing. "Go below and speak to her, won't you, Frank? discover the Spaniard's cargo and her sailing plans. Certainly, Francis said. I shall join you directly. We're to have dirty weather. The glass falls steady, and we need to move everything out of that tub before it sets in to blow. Some time later, Captain Blackwell came into his cabin, having nearly forgotten the presence of the woman aboard. He walked in, pulling his shirt over his head until he saw both his brother and the lady jump to their feet. Allow me to present Doña Mercedes de Aragon, Francis said. Doña Mercedes, Captain Blackwell, of His Britannic Majesty's ship, Inconstant. Mercy, Captain Blackwell said. It must have been fatigue or reaction to that bloody little action just past, and he immediately felt a fool. The Spanish lady, a young woman, was curtsying to him, and both she and his brother started at his outburst. Forgive me, I won't be a minute. He dodged into his sleeping cabin, followed by his steward catching up his discarded clothes and the ship's surgeon. It's someone else's blood, goddammit, as I've told you, Captain Blackwell said. You have your hands full, doctor, with those poor men from La Trinidad. I suggest you return to them. His steward poured water, and Captain Blackwell washed away the worst of the battle's dirt, and emerged a moment later, having exchanged his finery for working clothes. He found Francis and the lady still standing, the doctor and McMurtry, Captain Blackwell's ugly, toad-like steward, slipped out of the cabin. Please sit down. My brother has made himself known to you, ma'am. He serves the king as well, in the diplomatic service. Captain Blackwell paused and looked at Francis, awaiting his translation. Miss Mercedes speaks English, sir. Captain Blackwell turned to her. Ah, indeed. How is that? I boarded Captain De Leone Castillo's ship in Alta California, sir. I am not from Spain. De Leone Castillo, that was her captain. And she was coming from the Spanish Main? Yes, sir. Captain De Leone Castillo brought La Trinidad from the Pacific waters, round Cape Horn. And we were 2 days out of Funchal when... Mercedes paused, clasped her hands tighter in her lap, and hurried on. She carries 35,000 gold escudos, and she has some fine instruments in her cabin. A Berthoud's chronometer. Captain Blackwell regarded Mercedes with appreciation. 35,000 gold pieces. And this handsome woman had survived the passage round the Horn, and had a grasp of the value to a ship's captain of a well-made chronometer. Whatever her loyalties to Spain, Mercedes no doubt felt extremely the uncertainty of her present situation. Captain Blackwell noted her troubled expression as she looked from his face to Francis's, and then turned her gaze out the stern windows near which she was seated. Mercedes gave a little shriek, her hands held together over her breast. Captain Blackwell came near her and saw, floating face down, a body dressed in the uniform of Spain. It was a smallish man in an officer's coat. Captain Blackwell knew a strong desire to comfort her in her distress. And what is your relation to Captain De Leone Castillo, ma'am? But Mercedes had sprung up, and Francis stood also. Captain Blackwell strode to the door of the little closet knocked out of his own living space where his brother slept and flung it open. In here, ma'am, if you please. He bowed to Mercedes as she ran in, and he closed the door. You shall have to shift your quarters, Frank, Captain Blackwell said. You may have the first lieutenant's berth. Mr. Sprague must remain where he is. But she hasn't even a maid to loan her countenance, Francis said. This is not a yacht, sir. What would you have me do? Put her in the gunroom with my officers? On the lower deck where any man may get at her? There are men in this ship straight from His Majesty's prisons.
I was not thinking.
No, indeed. And you a diplomatic cove. Allow me to arrange matters in my own ship. Only McMurtry comes in here without my permission, and I shall answer for McMurtry. Now, we must knot and splice.
Captain Blackwell hastened out of the great cabin, leaving Francis behind distracted and bemused.
Thank you for listening to Captain Blackwell's Prize. This is a work of fiction offered under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives, 3.0 U.S. license. Music is Bach's Prelude from Suite No. 1, performed on Cello Journey, from Mevio's Music Alley, www.musicalley.com. For more information on Captain Blackwell's prize, visit www.veulett.com.